fantasy football today from CBS Sports.
Here we go.
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go.
If you still draft quarterbacks in round one, we're here to help.
Let's go.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Today on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, old people, can they still be good? Welcome to the show. I'm Adam Azer. And the combination today is Heath and Jamie once again. What's up, guys? You young men out there, how you doing?
Yeah, I think almost every single old person we're talking about is probably younger than us.
I was going to say the oldest person of our group is not here. Dave is the oldest.
Oh, yeah. Well,
now, you are older than me.
I'll be 40 this year.
Okay. Yep. Just a little.
Oh, but you're 40. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
Dave will be 40 in what's today?
Today's the 14th.
Oh, 10 days. Everybody,
oh, yeah.
Everybody tweet at Dave on July 24th.
But not until then. We want it to
but
be,
not until then. Yeah. And then when you do it, do not say that I told you because he'll get very mad at me.
Right.
He hates his birthday.
I also note that I didn't speak during that whole interaction.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Blame Heath.
Noted. Now, Heath has written a couple of articles on our website about players who might be over the hill. Are they getting to that point where they are over the hill? The ones we'll talk about today, and we'll get to the rest probably next week, but Tom Brady, Tony Romo, Jason Witten, Larry Fitzgerald, and Steve Smith. Hey, people, did you know that Jason Witten was a top 12 tight end last year? Yeah.
Every year.
I know, but last year, I mean, he was actually pretty horrible, but still somehow managed to be top 12.
Death taxes Jason Witten.
He played 16 games. That's kind of the key.
However, just as a teaser, if you look at weeks 2 through 16 and eliminate weeks 1 and 17, Jason Witten was, I don't even know if he would have been top 20. In that time frame, those are the only weeks he scored touchdowns or had more than 7 points.
To be fair,
yes,
his quarterback was gone.
Yes, exactly. So we'll talk about him, Fitzgerald, Steve Smith, Brady, and Romo. We want you to get our magazine. You can find our magazine. You can search on Amazon, our fantasy football magazine. They'll deliver it to your door. You can go to cbsports.com/fantasy for some great content. A lot of videos, a lot of articles, and of course, podcasts rolling out. And if you want to hear more podcasts that aren't necessarily fantasy football, cbssports.com/podcast for a list of all of our shows and how you can subscribe. cbssports.com/podcast. You can also email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. I will take some time over the weekend to respond to some emails that we don't read on the show. Quick news, injury new and note. LeSean McCoy will not be disciplined by the NFL for his role in a bar fight in Philadelphia. We talked about how Carlos Williams is overweight, and now Buffalo running back rookie Jonathan Williams arrested for a DWI. So,
not a good offseason for Buffalo running backs.
I know.
Carlos Williams is fat.
Yeah, I wonder, because I think we're seeing his ADP nosedive now, and appropriately, because we kind of ignored Eddie Lacy being fat last year, and a lot of people got burnt by it. But I wonder if that's going to change now with Jonathan Williams getting arrested. Like, if people are going to say, well, it kind of has to be Carlos Williams as the second back there.
Yeah, but I would, though, at least the way I view it,
right,
is that Jonathan Williams was fourth behind Gillislee.
Okay.
Because Gillislee was great last year for them.
They have a lot of running backs.
So I think this, and Adam, we talked about this a little yesterday, that LeSean McCoy's looking better, you know, just with the surrounding circumstances with the guys on his team.
Yeah, looks that way. Now, I'm looking at McCoy in your rankings in PPR, probably pretty similar in standard, but in PPR, McCoy is 11th for Jamie, 14th for Dave, 12th for Heath, and I can look it up in standard, but guys around LeSean McCoy, Devontae Freeman, Mark Ingram, Latavius Murray, Eddie Lacy is right behind McCoy for Heath. I know Jamie and Dave like Lacy more than Heath does. In standard scoring leagues, LeSean McCoy is 12, 13, and 13. So right around top 12 for all three guys. What point are you comfortable taking him? Because McCoy is a little scary to me.
Early third.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it kind of depends on how the draft goes. I could see a situation where I took him towards the end of the second, but right in that right 2-3 range.
All right, we yesterday talked about auctions, and I've been mentioning how I've gotten a lot of questions about auctions, getting more and more questions about two quarterback leagues, so perhaps we're seeing a trend in fantasy. Also, I'm wondering if more and more owners are playing with offensive player flex spots, where not true two quarterback leagues where you have to start two quarterbacks, but Have you guys been noticing that? Because I'm getting a lot of questions. I play in an offensive player league, or that can be another quarterback. So it's almost a two-quarterback league. Is this the year of the offensive player position?
The super flex?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I don't know if it's the year of it. I think it's becoming slightly more prevalent as people try to... I don't know if it's trying to make quarterback... Like, quarterback's super relevant, obviously. But also, everyone feels like they can wait just forever because they're going to get a good one because there's so many good quarterbacks. I wonder if it's just trying to add a little balance and adjust to the way the league is now.
Jamie, are you seeing more of that?
No, but I think what he said is dead on, is that people are looking at their waiver wire in regular formats and going, God, I can't believe Derek Carr is still available. Or at what point do I turn to Kirk Cousins or Ryan Fitzpatrick? And, you know, you're able to now carry those two guys and use those two guys where it's more fun.
Plus, if you don't want to play in a league where you have to have a long draft, you could just remove the kicker and add a super flex, and your league just got a lot better.
Now, first of all, I know I'm going to forget, so I do want to say that we have a pretty interesting article that I was able to skim before we went on the show on CBSSports.com/NFL. Why Derek Carr's late season slump should concern the Raiders heading into 2016. One of our writers looked at film of Derek Carr and noticed some trends that were a little concerning to him. So I encourage everybody to check it out and read it. I didn't really dig in. I think a lot of it was pass protection, which kind of broke down late.
Yeah,
I
did read it.
What'd you think?
A lot of it was pass protection. And as I think it's, I never get his full name right, but Sean McDonough.
Sean Wagner, and I think it's McGough or Magoo.
Something like that.
Yeah. That's why I said one of our writers.
Yes,
Jamie.
I apologize to Sean. He noted in there that the improvement of the offensive line should significantly help Derek Carr. But one thing he failed to mention is that Amari Cooper dealt with a significant foot injury and really didn't play in three of the final four games, or didn't play at the level that he played early in the season. And what Sean was noting was that Derek Carr's performance in the beginning of the season was fantastic, and it fell apart as the offensive line did, which is fair. But if you're also going to, you know, criticize the play of the offense, you got to take into account that the best receiver was hurt.
Absolutely. Looking at the last, let's see, seven games for Carr last year, 6 points at Detroit, big game at Tennessee, 29 fantasy points, 17 points in back-to-back weeks against Kansas City and at Denver, tough matchups, and Green Bay in week 15, 23 fantasy points on 47 attempts, San Diego in week 16, 17 fantasy points, and finally in week 17, Carr scored 12 fantasy points at Kansas City. But yeah, let's hope improved offensive line and healthy Amari Cooper for a full season would be very nice for Carr. Now, Heath, you always talk about eliminating kicker. How do you feel about eliminating DST? Because apparently in the draft that everybody in the industry is in but me, they don't have DSTs, right?
No defense, no kicker, and it's much better. I eliminate both. Now, I prefer, I guess the way I would rank it would be IDP would be my first preference. No defense would be my second preference, and team defense would be my third preference.
What do you have against team defense? I could understand kickers seem a little random, and I can understand eliminating that, but why eliminate defense? That's strategy. That's important stuff there.
It is to a certain extent. I think it also depends on how you're valuing the defense. Like, are we giving points for everything the defense does, or a lot of them now just give points for turnovers and sacks? Are you giving points for yards allowed, for points allowed?
I don't like the scoring systems that weight too much on DSTs. I agree with you on that.
Okay.
But come on, Jamie, we can't eliminate DSTs.
I mean, you can.
No, you can't.
I wouldn't do it, but I mean, you can.
No,
you
can't.
If you don't like it.
No, I'm sorry, you can't. It's a rule.
I like IDP a lot. I think that's a lot of fun.
Am I a big loser for not playing in IDP leagues?
Yes.
You want to play in our experts league this year? I'll invite you.
That's prestigious too, because only, 14 people get invited, right?
No, it's a 12-team league.
12 teams. You could be one of them.
I think I need to do IDP. I don't really want to, but I think I need to.
And this isn't a one for the faint of heart. This is this isn't like, you know, you just pick three IDP players. This is a full two defensive linemen, three linebackers, three defensive backs, and a flex.
My goodness.
Yeah, it's a long draft.
It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot. It is.
Heath's in it too?
Yeah. Heath was in it before he worked her.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's do it. I'm in.
And I forgot about that fact. And then he was like, yeah, I think I was in this draft last year. No.
I'm in. Let's do it. IDP. Awesome. If you don't know what that is, that's individual defensive player. Gonna be a little challenging, but I'm sure there will be rankings that I'll be following.
There will be at least three podcasts where you complain about being in an IDP.
Oh, for sure.
You know what? I'll tell you what, man. A couple years ago, I had never done any keeper fantasy baseball leagues or daily lineup fantasy baseball leagues. Everything I had done had been weekly. So I said, I'm going to do a daily and a keeper. I did a keeper league this year. Last year, I started doing some daily leagues. And I mostly did it for the sake of the podcast, because if I'm going to host the podcast, I got to be able to relate to everybody, right? I like it. I didn't think I would. I like it. It's not as much work as I thought it would be. So I anticipate it'll be the same thing with IDP.
The guy who works from home didn't anticipate it being as much work as it normally would.
I haven't been working from home the entire time, Jamie. Okay, that is a recent development.
And baseball season, right? You've been working from home?
Yeah, but 2 years ago, I'm saying I did a... Shut up. So, all right, three things before we get into over the hill players, and we'll have a nice amount of time to spend breaking down these players. I think that's one of the advantages of these early podcasts. If you're listening now before training camp starts, is we can really dive into these guys and you'll get a leg up on your league. Heath, you were right about something. I know. Spotlight is a great movie.
Yes, outstanding.
Watched it last night. Mentioned this on the Fantasy Baseball Podcast, but I wanted to tell you, Heath, great recommendation. Absolutely loved it.
Thank you. I'm glad that maybe the first movie ever that you and I have both enjoyed.
I'm sure that's not true, but the first one that we know about.
Right.
Yeah, that is true. Ghostbusters is coming out Friday, and I'm actually quite excited. I might see it tomorrow night.
Oh.
Yeah, I am. It's legit.
God. Yeah, this is going to be. How many movies have you walked out of so far in your life?
Five-ish.
This will be six.
See, this is the problem, because you really overvalue the originals. So, like, this, there's no way this is going to live up to anybody's expectations, but certainly not yours.
I'm going to go in with pretty low expectations, but I'm still looking forward to it. It'll probably be bad, but some of the reviews have actually been solid.
By at adamazer.net.
No, I'm gonna Rotten Tomatoes it. I remember it was pretty high up there. See, okay, Ghostbusters on Rotten Tomatoes. Critics gave it a 74%. Keep an open mind, people. This could be a good movie. And finally,
obviously, it could be.
It could be.
Hopefully it is.
If I go see it and I tell you that it's good, would you take that?
You have the absolute worst taste in movies.
It's just not true.
It is.
Hey, how do you feel about Orange is the New Black?
It's the worst show of all time. I know that I tweeted that and I got a lot of response. That is the worst show. Okay, like... So what happens is I'll be sitting on the couch doing some work or something, and my fiance will watch her shows, and some of them are good. Like, she watched Shameless, and I was kind of picking up on it, and I was like, damn, this show's really good. And now I'm getting into Shameless. But Orange is the New Black is so bad. I cannot understand how it keeps getting rid of it. It is so bad. Oh my God, what a terrible show. Now, Nintendo is being re-released, I understand, Heath.
This is amazing. Yes.
This is great.
Apparently it's like a Nintendo Mini. It fits in the palm of your hand. It plugs into your television. You play with original Nintendo controllers, or you can plug in Wii controllers if you have one of those, I guess. Comes with 30 games. Unfortunately, they put the wrong Tecmo Bowl in it.
Yeah, we already got an email about that from James.
Yes, they did put the wrong, but I know why. I was going to respond to James, but I'll just tell him. They put that Tecmo Bowl in it, I feel pretty confidently, because they know they can sell Super Tecmo Bowl. Mm.
Oh, so you can buy all the other games?
I don't know that for sure yet. They've not announced that, but I'm expecting that they are going to want to sell games to this new system they're releasing, yes.
Ooh, wow. Some of the games they're releasing that I played a lot, Castlevania, Excitebike. Yeah, that was a good one. Mario, Ninja Gaiden, Punch-Out, but not Mike Tyson, Mr. Dream. Wow, a lot of Mario's here, and Tecmo Bowl, Zelda, and Zelda 2, among many others.
And I guess it's only going to be $60.
I'm in, man. This is great. I didn't really like the Wii that much.
Something else to keep you locked into your house.
Thank you. I'm going to try to leave tonight. Just
you know what the nice thing is about this? For your water bill, it's one less shower per week.
You know... Okay, that's a great point. The electricity bill's going up, the water bill's going down. All right, so let's talk about some players that might be over the hill. I encourage you to read Heath's articles, but let's debate five of these guys. Tom Brady and Tony Romo are two of the quarterbacks. The other two are Drew Brees and Carson Palmer. We'll save them for next week. We'll start with Brady. We talked about Gronkowski and Edelman yesterday, but Brady's going to be 39 years old, missing the first four games, most likely, entering his 17th season. And Heath, what are your thoughts on Brady going into this year?
I think the word I would use is mixed. Like, we have no evidence that I can see that suggests that Tom Brady is approaching a decline. But at the same time, you said it, he's 39 years old when the season starts. Over the next two or three years, Tom Brady's more likely than not going to fall off the cliff in terms of production. I hope it's not this year. The suspension's a bad thing. With that appeal being denied, I think the odds of him being suspended four games are like 90% in my mind. At least that's the way I'm looking at it. But the nice thing about that suspension is it holds his average draft position down enough to where he's not a terrible value. So I think Brady is worth the risk, because the upside is that after this four-week suspension, you're getting the second or third best quarterback in fantasy.
You think that's what he'll be?
I said the upside.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I think he has that type of upside. I think it's more likely that he's somewhere, like from week five on, that he's somewhere in the six or seven range.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jamie, if we can compare him to Peyton Manning, who just fell off a cliff really quickly, lost his arm strength and was awful last year and then retired. It's hard to imagine that happening to Tom Brady.
I don't think it's as likely to happen to Brady this year as it did to Manning, because Manning at least had a reason for that happening. He had the neck injury. Mm-hmm. He had the not being able to feel his fingers or whatever. I mean, I think it was more likely that he was going to fall off a cliff last year, but it's possible. I mean, he's 39.
Well, I think the thing that helps Brady is the offense and the type of throws that he makes.
Right.
Because he's not going to make his numbers on throws down the field. Now, you can argue that Peyton made a lot of his numbers, especially the MVP season, with a lot of bubble screens to Demaryius Thomas. But I think you look at what the Patriots offense is. You know, we've been saying this since Chad Johnson was a brief employee of ours, and when he spent a year in New England, their offense is predicated inside out, where most offenses are predicated throwing the ball outside in. So he's able to, you know, utilize yards after the catch from his receivers. He's able to, you know, they throw in the red zone so much. I think you're looking at a guy who the only knock to me on him is the four games that he's missing. And you kind of, and we talked about this with the, you know, quarterbacks with the offensive player situation. There's so many good quarterbacks. You should be able to cover yourself easily.
Right.
In a 12-team standard league with you start one quarterback.
So if Tom Brady were playing all 16 games, where would you have ranked him?
Top five.
Would you have gone Russell Wilson or Tom Brady?
Brady. I would have gone Wilson.
Brady. I mean, look what Brady did last year. You know, we rightfully so get excited about the way Russell Wilson played in the, you know, final 7-8 games of the season. That's basically what Brady was doing from the beginning part of the year until the end. You know, 26 fantasy points a game. So, I mean, you have a little bit better track record with Brady, but I can understand, you know, the upside of Wilson too. It's to me right now, the five quarterbacks, if Roethlisberger had Martavis Bryant, or if I knew that Sammy Coates or Marcus Wheaton would be similar to those guys.
Or decent. Or just decent.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just the ability to put up numbers, or Darius Green, you know, maybe steps into that role. To me, there are five elite quarterbacks going into the season, with Breeze being the fifth. You could argue Carson Palmer too, and Roethlisberger, but I think Brady's in that discussion.
Okay. So Tom Brady is eighth in ADP on Fantasy Pros right now. Cam, Rodgers, Wilson, Luck, Roethlisberger, Breeze, Palmer, Brady, and then, you know, Bortles, Romo, Manning, et cetera.
Well, I just want to say something, because he, you know, indicated it with our average draft position. He's going to be pushed down a lot because of our autoed picks. He is, based on how we have to do projections, you have to project him based on a 12-game season. So his numbers are going to be really significantly lower. So if you want to take advantage of your league, don't suggest sorting their draft rooms by anybody's rankings. Yeah. And just use the projections. If you want to get an idea of where Brady should go, you can sort by our rankings, myself, Heath, and Dave, and you can see where we have him ranked. So he's obviously going to be pushed up higher than where the projections
are. It's one of the coolest things in the new draft room. I'm really dreading my home league draft.
Yeah, pool. Stuff.
That's not going to be fun when everybody else can sort the players left by my rankings.
Right.
Three picks away from my pick.
Hey, are my rankings going to be up there? Or?
You could do rankings if you wanted to.
Absolutely.
I would love to see you on a Monday doing rankings.
Oh, weekly rankings?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, how hard could it be?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's cake.
I'll as do the IDP as, rankings. You
as
do
bad as
offense.
You are at ranking movies.
Tony Romo. Also getting up there in age. Tony Romo is 36. Although in the notes I put that he's 26. That can't be right, right?
Is it fair to say that Tony Romo's body is actually older than Tom Brady's?
Probably.
Because he's been through so many... I had somebody in the comments of this article tell me that Tony Romo's injury proneness was just a creation of the media.
Oh, yeah.
He actually has been very healthy. Here's the thing that I didn't realize, because I was going through writing this piece, and when Tony Romo's been healthy, he's averaged like 17 fantasy points a game.
What? In what? 4 points or 6 points per passing touchdown?
6 point.
What are you talking about?
He's had 2 or 3 years where he was like 19, but pretty much every other year is right around 17.
That cannot be right.
I think you should look at it.
Because he has been, before last year,
he's been a top 10 quarterback.
Every single year, a top 8 quarterback since 2009, except for 2010 when he played 6 games, and last year when he played 4. Top 8 every single year.
Okay, what I was looking at basically had him outscoring Matt Ryan over the 4 years they were both healthy by about 0.2 points per game.
You're saying Ryan only averaged 15?
No, 0.2.
Oh, 0.2.
Yeah, but that makes sense because Ryan has been like top 10 most of those years, and he was number 5 one of those years. That's not including 2015, right?
That's not including 2015, which Tony Romo last year, I mean, if you look, he only played 4 games and averaged like 6 points a game or something because he had 7 interceptions and 5 touchdowns.
Yeah,
not
he scored 28 points in week 1.
But yeah.
And then
I think Romo is definitely a top 10 guy when he's healthy, but I don't. When he's been top 5, not at all since 2009.
Yeah, he's more around 8 every year.
4 of those seasons he played 15 or 16 games.
But nobody's drafting him to be top 5 though.
Right, but why? I don't know why he's being drafted 8th or 9th amongst quarterbacks if that's basically right around where his upside is. And
is he being drafted that high?
He's a 9th QB off the board, is that right, Adam?
10th behind Bortles.
Oh, okay, well, he shouldn't be behind Bortles, but I think I'd rather have Ryan than Romo. Because I think they're probably going to do about the same thing when they're healthy, and Ryan's more likely to play 16 games than Romo is.
Yeah, but Romo's more likely to throw more touchdowns. And that's been the case over the course of his career.
Right. He's been more consistently at 31 while Ryan's been at like 28.
Well, let me say this about Romo.
Like, I think Romo is much better than Ryan, but he's not going to get the same volume.
No, that's kind of what I was going to say.
Well, it depends. I mean, that defense is horrifically awful right now.
But last year, Jamie, the Cowboys, so 2 years ago when Romo was the number 8 quarterback, despite having the best passer rating in the NFL, he had the 23rd most pass attempts.
It was efficient. Yeah, sure.
He was amazing. Mm-hmm. So, but last year, you know, they didn't quite have the same offensive efficiency. I was wondering if they threw the ball more. They did throw the ball more, but still only the 10th most pass attempts in the NFL. So more than Carolina, more than Cincinnati, more than Seattle. Those are 3 teams that had very productive fantasy quarterbacks, at least while Dalton was healthy. But it still looks like they're going to do everything they can to run the ball a lot.
He's had 1 year in his career where he's thrown more than 550 passes.
Yeah.
550 is not that many anymore for a top 10 quarterback.
No, Rivers was 660 last year.
I think the appeal for Romo, if you just want to completely men in black erase your mind of last year and just look at 2014, is that he was arguably the best quarterback in the NFL. He had an MVP caliber season, and he did it with the 23rd most pass attempts in the NFL. And so if they just let him throw a little bit more behind that great offensive line and he can be as good as he was in 2014, there's your upside.
I mean, look, there are a lot of red flags with him. You have his best receiver coming off 2 foot surgeries. Is he still going to be an elite level guy?
And really kind of his only receiver.
Well, I think, you know, we didn't really get a chance to see Terrence Williams take that next step last year because of what happened with Romo.
Right.
And Williams being forced into being the number one guy, which he's not. He's never going to be that type of receiver. So I think there's still like, I wouldn't be surprised if Williams, not the upper, I don't know, I don't want to make that comparison, but he could still be a good complimentary guy. You know, not one of the better number two receivers in the NFL. Like, he's not going to be, you know, Eric Decker, but he could be maybe Allen Hurns. I wouldn't be surprised if he has that type of season. And Witten, you know, we laid out how he performed last year, but he's a reliable tight end from a quarterback's standpoint, not from a fantasy standpoint.
Right.
I still think that, look, we're also counting on a rookie running back here to be Emmitt Smith and, you know, Tony Dorsett.
We just need to be DeMarco Murray.
Well, if he's DeMarco Murray, then he's great.
Can I tell you one of the most surprising things I saw? The Cowboys were fifth in yards per carry last year. And I know McFadden had a good year, but they also had a lot of, you know, bad Joseph Randall at the beginning of the year. And I was just surprised that they ran the ball as well as they did. They were one of the best rushing teams in the NFL last year. And just even seeing that made me a little more comfortable with Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be pretty bad not to do well in Dallas.
I almost think he has to get hurt not to do well. I've seen enough to believe that he's better than Darren McFadden.
I did a podcast today with two former colleagues here, Eric Mack and David Ganos. Ganos has been covering fantasy football pretty much since its inception. He's been around that long. And he said he can't remember a rookie having a first round ADP ever.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably true.
Like, and, you know, I think that the way I answered it when he, you know, he said that he wouldn't take him in the first round, and Emacs said the same thing. That just that there's too much risk involved because, you know, you don't see rookies necessarily perform as we expect them to.
Right.
Bishop Sankey owners can attest to that. Where would you have drafted Todd Gurley last year knowing that he was going to play as much as he did and as well as he did? And the answer would probably be in the first round.
Oh, right.
You know, so I think, you know, you have to kind of throw out the situation, and it's working for him, for Elliott, in a perfect situation because of how poorly running backs did last year and because of the situation he ended up in.
Right.
I really wonder what scouts would say about Elliott versus Gurley, because Elliott was drafted earlier than Gurley was drafted, different years, different drafts. He goes into a better situation, obviously, so it's not really a fantasy standpoint, but is Ezekiel Elliott as good as Todd Gurley? My guess is no, and I'm interested to seeing what the answer is. Although it'll always be, if Elliott does do better than Gurley, it'll always be with the caveat, yeah, but he's behind that offensive line.
Oh, sure.
Rightly so.
Maybe we'll never.
The Cowboys have drafted three running backs in the NFL draft in the first 20 picks, and the other two are in the Hall of Fame.
Emmitt and Dorsett?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Next up, Jason Witten. We'll transition from Romo to Witten here. Witten was number 12 in standard, number 10 in PPR last year. But yeah, again, it was a really bad year other than weeks 1 and 17.
I looked it up. From weeks 2 through 16, he was still 12th in PPR. But in standard, he was 21st.
Okay.
But that's not, I mean, almost every tight end in the top 12, if you take away their two best weeks, they were not in the top 20.
Probably.
So that's not totally fair. There's some statistics you could look at that look like maybe he's on the decline, like notably his 9.3 yards per carry or reception last season. But more than anything, this is just having watched Jason Witten last year, it looks painful to watch him run. Like he was slow in the first place and he's lost steps. I just don't see how they're going to have to throw the ball to him a lot in the red zone. They've done that twice in his career.
Yeah. If I could make a case for Witten,
okay.
Again, Men in Black, erase your memory, forget about 2015, right?
Okay, I don't like doing that, but okay.
But I mean, if you want to talk about from did he lose a step, then that would be relevant. But just in terms of production, I don't think it's fair to judge him. They had one of the worst quarterback situations in the NFL. So go back to 2014, mm-hmm. and Witten was the number 10 tight end in standard, number 9 in PPR. With 703 yards on 64 catches and 5 touchdowns. It wasn't a great year, but, you know, and that was all part of Romo throwing the ball less. In my opinion, he didn't really lose anything up through 2014. They just threw the ball less and he suffered from that and still managed to be a top 10 tight end in 2014. That's how I saw it, just looking at the numbers with Witten. Because the yards per catch was consistent every single year, except for last year.
Right.
You know,
and the year that he had 110 catches, which he bounced back from that.
He did bounce back from that. That was 2012.
Right. I just don't see hardly any upside at all. And you're talking about, and I guess maybe it's hypocritical the way I'm looking at Witten versus Antonio Gates, because I'm more excited about Gates. But I just watching him last year and then the yards per reception, I feel like he has to play 16 games. He has to get targeted in the red zone. I don't know if either one are going to happen.
Yeah, Jamie, what do you think about Witten?
I have no interest.
I mean, 24th for you. Wow.
Yeah, it's just the volume is not even great, you know, to get him to be in the top 12. You know, so I'd rather just stream tight ends and play matchups each week and, you know, trust Vance McDonald 1 week and Clive Walford another week. And
right. Yeah, you look at the tight ends that are in that range, and besides Witten, it's almost all young tight ends with upside.
Right.
So you'd rather have any of them.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. I mean, it's like Witten could just figure out a way to end up in the top 12 the way Chris Johnson used to do.
Sure.
Just because Witten has missed one game his entire career and it was in his rookie season. But on a week-by-week basis, you could probably do better playing.
I mean, I guess I brought up Gates, and I'm sure we'll talk about him more next week because he was in these articles as well. But I think the biggest difference for me between those two is I can absolutely see Phillip Rivers leaning on Gates in the red zone and him scoring 10 touchdowns.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be that surprising to me at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and all 10 of those would come in the first 6 games, and then he'd be horrible after that. Larry Fitzgerald was the number 11 wide receiver in standard last year, number 7 in PPR. He will be 33 years old in August, and it's easy to point to his pretty lousy production toward the end of the season, which I do all the time. But if you want to make a case for him, including the playoffs, he caught a touchdown in 3 straight games and 3 of his last 4 to end the season. Not a touchdown in the final game of the season, the loss at Carolina, but the home game against Green Bay in the playoffs, 8 catches, 176 yards, and a touchdown. So, Heath, I have a feeling you like Larry Fitzgerald more than Jamie does.
I always like Larry Fitzgerald, right? Maybe not always, but I do. He did not score a lot of touchdowns in the second half, you're right. He was still on 110 catch pace after week 8. He was still on a 1,000 to 1,100 yard pace after week 8. I don't think that the touchdown rate in the second half is as predictive or more predictive than the reception or the yardage rates. And so if he has 95 catches for 1,100 yards and scores 8 touchdowns, he's going to be a top 24 wide receiver again.
So he really
How many times has he done that, though, in the last 5 years?
How many times has he had a good quarter? I mean, maybe Palmer gets hurt. But if he has – if Carson Palmer is healthy all season, I don't know why he wouldn't. I mean, he played with some awful, awful quarterbacks for most of his prime. But he's only done it once in the last 4 years.
Larry Fitzgerald, you're saying.
Uh-huh.
He, last 8 games of the season, was on 100 catch pace?
Yes.
Really? Now, it's interesting because if you look at the last 6 games of the regular season, it can't even be close to that. Because he was terrible the last 6 games, basically.
Last five.
Well, week 17, he had 11 fantasy points. But,
yeah, I'm looking at receptions and not yardage, not fantasy points. But he had 10 catches for 66 yards in week 12. Then he had the touchdown in week 16, touchdown week 17.
It was pretty disappointing stuff, I thought, at the end.
Yeah, the thing about it is that Michael Floyd started the year with a hand injury that he had in the 3rd week of the preseason. And it wasn't until week 6 where I think he was fully over that, because that's when you started to see him play like the guy that we saw over the course of the previous 2 years. And as a result, the plays down the field disappeared for Larry Fitzgerald. And then John Brown clearly is a guy that they're continuing to,
right,
you know, try and improve on. I wonder, though, there is talk out of Arizona about J.J. Nelson being more involved. Whose expense does that come out?
That scares me.
Is it the aging veteran,
right,
in Fitzgerald, who, you know, doesn't have a long, I think, tenure there after maybe this year or the next year? Is it Michael Floyd, who's a free agent, you know, and they don't really maybe want to see if they have to pay him?
Right.
Or is it John Brown, you know, who's going to come up? I believe his contract's up next year, after next year. So I don't think that you're going to get what you're hoping for out of any of these guys. I mean, look, I like Michael Floyd. I like all 3, you know, to varying degrees. You're not going to get it if there's a 4th guy involved, because
Right.
There's just only so many footballs to go around if David Johnson plays like he's supposed to play. So,
but I do really think that's a possibility. I mean, four guys being integral parts of the offense. Have we ever
I don't think it has to be integral parts of the offense. It has to just be, you know, if JJ Nelson gets, you know, from one target a game on average to four, whose expense is it coming off? You know, well, so Larry Fitzgerald, yes, the 10 for 66, where is great in PPR, is it now 7 for 45? You know, and that makes it look awful.
Right. And I think also when you're talking about Michael Floyd, Larry Fitzgerald, and John Brown, the odds of that trio playing 48 games next year is pretty low. Like, exceptionally low.
But if it's 45 games? I mean, look, Michael Floyd played through the hand injury. He just wasn't good.
Right.
They came pretty close last year.
Right. I mean, Brown had two games that he missed with the hamstring, but he played through two more with bad hamstring. Floyd missed a game with a hamstring, but he played through the hand injury, even though he was awful. And look, Fitzgerald could get hurt. I mean, you know,
right,
that's
good.
That's obviously a possibility. And you also have a quarterback that's torn his ACL twice in his career. So I think that, you know, you just have to gauge which Larry Fitzgerald you're looking at. Are you looking at the guy who put up the body of work over the course of the season, which the numbers look great? You said, Adam, he was 11th best receiver. You break down the numbers. They weren't as awful as maybe they look, especially from a PPR standpoint, if he was on that pace and had some of these games. I just see a guy that over the 2 years with Carson Palmer, when everybody has been healthy, he has not played at the level that we saw in those first five games of the season. So,
right.
That's the way I gauge it. So to me, he's not a top 30 guy. He's somebody that I would rather settle for than reach for. And I would take the upside of the two younger guys, one in a contract year, one in his third year. And those two things tend to push guys up more so than pull them down.
So Larry Fitzgerald is 22nd for Heath and 33rd for Jamie. Dave has him 32nd overall. That's in standard, and it's not too much different in PPR. It's, you know, basically the same in PPR. And in Fantasy Pros ADP, he's 27th off the board. So I guess he's right smack in the middle of the rankings there.
Which tells you why I always get him and Dave and Jamie don't, because I've got him ranked just above his ADP, and they haven't ranked just below his ADP.
He's going one pick after Michael Floyd.
Okay. In PPR, he's going four picks before.
Oh, man. Let me just tell you something here, everybody. I don't have a sleepers, breakouts, busts column, but I'm going to do it right now. Because my number one breakout this year is Michael Floyd. Michael Floyd is this year's Allen Robinson. He will be a second round pick next year. OMG.
It's funny. I was just in the draft the other night with Adam Pfeffer, who's a writer for another fantasy site.
Yeah.
And we were having a conversation. I said, Devontae Parker this year, Allen Robinson. This year's Allen Robinson because of his circumstance. Second year receiver coming off a foot injury, has a chance to emerge as the number one guy in a new offense. He says it's Dante Moncrief because of third year receiver. And now we have another guy saying another person being nominated for this year's Allen Robinson.
I'm going to go ahead and say there's not going to be an Allen Robinson probably this year.
There won't be one?
Well, not to that degree.
Yeah, this there will.
Okay.
A random
But it depends
guy
on what you're clarifying. Is, you know, just a receiver to come out of nowhere or mid-round pick to become a superstar?
Mid-round pick, yeah, top five or six wide receiver.
To finish as a top five or six wide receiver.
Yeah. I think Robinson was top five last year.
Right, he was close.
Yeah, he had to have been. I mean, 1,400 yards and 14 touchdowns.
Yep.
I don't see that out of... Now, I'm excited about Brown. I took Brown and Floyd in the draft that we're in right now. Because Fitzgerald was the one that went first. Normally, Floyd goes first, and then I take Fitzgerald, but...
Robinson was fourth, by the way, but one fantasy point ahead of Odell Beckham, who missed one game with the suspension. Look, you can't look at the landscape and say, oh, yeah, I see that from this guy, or else he'd be much higher, but...
You just did.
Well, obviously, it's going to be Michael Floyd. I'm trying to tell you that now.
Okay.
Yeah. Last guy, Steve Smith. Was playing pretty well before he tore that Achilles. In fact, based on his pace through seven games last year, if he had done that for 16 games, Steve Smith would have been the number eight wide receiver in fantasy, tied with AJ Green in fantasy points in standard scoring leagues. But he's 37, entering his 16th season, and Smith is coming off a torn Achilles. There's no way Heath Cummings is excited about Steve Smith this year.
Man, I really don't want to doubt Steve Smith. I hate doubting Steve Smith, but I don't know how you could have any faith at all in a 37-year-old coming off an injury that most 27-year-olds don't respond very well to. I And then you've got the quotes where he says he's just coming back for his 1,000th reception, and then he's just going to ride off into the sunset. I don't think he's really going to do that, but I'm not sure he's going to get to 1,000 receptions either.
How many does he have?
He's like 40-some short.
I thought it was 37. 37?
Okay. It's 35 to 45. Right. It's right in that range.
I'll take it. I'll say he gets there.
I mean, if he wants to, he probably does, because Steve Smith usually in his life has succeeded at the things that he wants to accomplish. But all the cards are stacked against him. I don't think people are downgrading him enough because of that injury. His ADP is somewhere in the 9th round. I'm not willing to take him that high.
Jamie?
I wouldn't take him that high either, but I would take him in the right circumstances, just right. Because what do you have to lose when you're, you know, we've talked a little bit about this week of, you know, Devin Funchess and Terrence Williams and Chris Hogan and Philip Dorsett, and, you know, pick a receiver that you like, you know, any of the Packers third string guys.
He's just not going in that range.
Right. That's the thing.
Right. That's the thing. I mean, but that's where I think you should value him. If you're getting him late, like he went in the SFB 480, 14th or 15th round. That's perfect.
Right.
That is good.
You know, and most drafts don't go that far, but I think 11th, 12th round in a 12 team, 15 round draft, I would take a chance on him as a fifth receiver.
Yeah.
Because if he does come back, and he said he's accomplished most things he set out to do in his life, he's got a receiving core that's just not very good, especially if Perryman doesn't ever play to the level that the Ravens hope. And maybe he gets to the 40 catches by week 6, you know, and he's like, well, I'm playing pretty well. Let me keep this up.
Now, let me tell you where Steve Smith is going, according to Fantasy Pros. 39th off the board at wide receiver, ahead of, or well, let's see, 37, 38, 39 is Tyler Lockett, Marvin Jones, Steve Smith.
And he does not belong in that category.
Right.
And then Sterling Shepard and Corey Coleman and Marcus Wheaton.
No.
Yeah. So he's going a little too early.
You can make an argument for Marcus Wheaton, but everybody else should be well ahead of him.
All right. Well, that is the conclusion of our Over the Hill player talk, potentially Over the Hill. Now, I'm going to ask you, we talked about Brady, Romo, Witten, Fitzgerald, and Steve Smith. Heath, if I could get all 5 of them on the podcast, tell me which one you would be most comfortable telling, I think you're going to be over the hill this year, and which one you'd be least comfortable telling, I think.
Well, least comfortable without a, like, am I have to tell them to their face or just over the...
They're in studio with you.
There's no way I'm telling Steve Smith.
I know, right?
I think I'd be most comfortable telling Jason Witten. He seems like he'd probably just laugh about
Steve
it.
Steve Smith, one of the nicest guys I've ever interviewed.
Okay, I believe that. Yeah.
But one you never told guys. Him he was old.
No, but we had a good discussion because he doesn't believe in third-year wide receivers, and I was like, no, you're wrong.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good, another guy who doesn't believe in third-year wide receivers. What was his reason?
He said the reason he didn't – well, he, by the way, he is a third-year breakout. He said the reason was because he didn't really play much as a rookie. Then he was relegated to special teams. And he said if he had he played as a rookie, he would have been better by his third year.
Actually, I'm going to change who I want to tell that. I'll tell Larry Fitzgerald that because since I have him so much higher than everybody else, maybe it'll motivate him.
Okay, good call.
I think, honestly, the scariest one would be Brady because you just might disappear. Yeah. Like he's got connections to things that we just don't have.
Oh, yeah. And then he'll throw his cell phone out and nobody will ever
That's
know
right.
about
yep.
it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. He's going to play all 16 games.
You
know, there's an interesting story. I think it was on ESPN.com. I heard it on the radio that somebody was talking about it. That if it goes to the Supreme Court, they could hear the case during the season, and he may still get suspended during the year.
Yeah. I don't think there's any chance it's going to the Supreme Court.
I don't either. But look, he spent a lot of money on this so far. He's clearly saying that he's not going to admit guilt.
Right.
It doesn't sound like he's just going to say, okay, fine, I'm suspended.
No, it doesn't.
So if he does decide to push this toward the Supreme Court, they have to first decide if they're going to hear it. And then once they decide if they're going to hear it, then they have to decide, you know, what a ruling would be. So I guess the thought is, and I may be saying this incorrectly, so I apologize, but I think the thought is that they could rule or I guess not rule on this, you know, after they decide not to hear it. And then he's suspended for 4 games and it could be November, December, maybe in the playoffs for the Patriots. I don't know how the NFL would handle that, but it's really interesting to see what happens if, in fact, they do send it to the Supreme Court, and if that process, which takes 3 or 4 months, I believe, then they decide not to hear the case.
So I'm going to say I'm so confident that the Supreme Court is not going to hear the case that if the Supreme Court hears the Tom Brady case, then Michael Floyd will have a bad year. That's how confident
You know, the funny thing is that I wonder if they, you know, Brady says he wants to, you know, push it to the Supreme Court. And so then they go through this process and they don't hear the case, but he's able to play all 16 games. Does he retire?
Before they can even
before they can suspend him again.
Yeah, maybe.
That'd be fun.
Got a lot of epic retirements lately, huh? Duncan and Kobe and who else? One other, right? No, there was three.
Well, I mean, Peyton still counts, right?
Poppy.
Yeah, Peyton.
Poppy.
Ortiz, yes. We are getting
Abby Wambach.
Abby Wambach, we're getting some of the best.
Yeah.
Best ever. Ready for emails?
Yes.
Okay. My favorite types of emails, keeper questions, but first this one. Kyle says, hola, ketchup, mustard, and mayo.
Oh, that's Three Amigos.
Yeah, well, it is an incorrect condiment ranking, though. But
which one do you hate again? You hate ketchup, right?
Well, I hate mustard. Let's specifically say, how would you rank them on a burger? Since all three, probably the only thing you're going to put all three of them on would be a burger.
In that order.
Yeah, I would put mayo first. I'm kind of outgrowing ketchup, I think.
Mayo is the worst. You really like mayo?
Yeah.
I love mayo.
I'm not putting ketchup on a burger without mustard.
I'd go mayo, ketchup, mustard.
Ugh. What's wrong with you?
I think I'd go mayo, mustard, ketchup.
Ugh. You too.
So here's Kyle's question. I recently did a mock draft for a 12-team league. And ended up with LeSean McCoy and Eddie Lacy in rounds 2 and 3. When I got into the latter rounds and into handcuff territory, I was split on which one I needed to handcuff. James Starks or Carlos Williams? Who would you take first?
If they're sugar-coated handcuffs, Carlos Williams is your guy.
Well, he'll have all the mayo, ketchup, and mustard, that's for sure. Mayo!
It's funny because as a standalone player, I'd rather have Carlos Williams than James Starks. But as a handcuff, I almost think Starks is more important.
Yeah.
I would take Carlos Williams.
I would take Carlos Williams first.
Okay.
I understand taking Starks first because you're more worried about Lacy than you are McCoy. That makes sense, but I would take Carlos.
I'm more worried about McCoy than Lacy. Who are you more worried about? You're more worried
Lacy
about
Lacy for sure, like 100 times.
Pounds?
Okay. We'll save that for next week. I have something to tell you. I'll tell you next week.
Okay.
Justin from a town in central Wisconsin. You got to step up here, Heath.
Oh, this is my choice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Milwaukee.
Is that in central Wisconsin?
Well, it's not. Are we talking central, north, and south, or east and west?
Central.
So it has to be in like the middle, complete middle.
Yeah, well, close to it, yeah.
I think Milwaukee suffices.
Stevens Point. Wisconsin. PPR league, 10 team, 3 keepers. Keep each up to 3 years at the original drafted round. I'm keeping Gronk in the 3rd and Odell Beckham Jr. in the 17th.
Wow.
Which you keep as the 3rd keeper in a PPR league, 10 teams. Carlos Hyde in the 4th or John Brown in the 7th?
In a 10 team league, it's John Brown. Because Carlos Hyde in a 12 team league goes in the 4th round.
Yeah, I think it's got to be Brown, especially with PPR, because Hyde's kind of useless in PPR.
I mean, they're both going in that same realm anyway.
Right.
Yeah. This is from LT, from a city south of the wall in Wisconsin.
Definitely Milwaukee.
No, this is River Run, south of the wall. Hey, he says, hey, Gray Wind, Ghost, and Summer. Oh, are those the Direwolves?
Has to be.
Yeah. Sorry, Heath.
Are any still alive?
One of them might be. I have no freaking idea. I don't even know who Jon Snow is. I'm very lost.
You know nothing, Adam Major.
Yeah. But I've been watching some very cool Game of Thrones clips on YouTube. They've clarified a lot of things for me. I'm quite thankful. So anyway, the question from LT. Recently, I was inspired by Heath and Jaime's Fantasy Football Analyst League. And as long as people keep spelling it Jaime, I will pronounce it Jaime.
Okay.
I like it.
I wanted to create a league that was similar to change things up from my competitive standard league. I wanted to do something different and creative for free agency during the season, but I'm having trouble coming up with a method. Any ideas? Also, what are your thoughts on having divisions in the league and playoff spots determined by division champs? Don't worry, Adam, you're probably number 419 in my fantasy analyst rankings.
You've got a fan.
Yeah, love it. Michael Floyd.
Creative ways to handle free agency.
In like a big league like the one you guys are doing with 420 people.
Yeah, is that creative enough? I was trying to think of something. Yeah. I mean,
you don't have to get crazy with it.
Yeah, I guess you could just do fab, unless hopefully you don't do fab in your normal league, and then it wouldn't be creative at all. I don't really like divisions that much, unless it's a really big league.
I like divisions.
I guess it's the sole purpose of doing it's for fun.
Yeah.
Like, somebody's much more likely to get screwed if you have divisions.
Oh, yeah. Yes,
for sure.
Well, someone's completely unlikely to get screwed if you don't have divisions, right?
Well, no, they could still score 100 more points more than the guy that finishes five spots ahead of them.
Well, that's a cool thing about divisions. So I think if you do divisions, it's easier. I don't think you could obviously do this without divisions too, but if you have divisions, you say the two division winners make the playoffs, and then if you don't want to do the next best records, you can do the next best fantasy point totals.
Yeah, do divisions, but make sure that like the 6 and 7 seed go to the two highest scoring teams.
Or that, yeah. 6 and 7.
Don't ever do the 8 seed going to the highest scoring team.
8 seed? How many teams are making the playoffs?
In this method, I think 8, but it wouldn't have to be.
How many teams are in this league?
Are we just making things up now?
Yeah.
Let's say there's 16.
Okay.
This was bad. Yeah. Okay. So, Alex from Vancouver. Hey, Huey, Dewey, and Louie. I have a keeper question for you. I'm in a 12 team, 2 quarterback, half point PPR keeper league. We can keep 3 players each year for a maximum of 3 years. So he's got Beckham in the 10th, David Johnson in the 12th. Needs a third. It's a 2 quarterback league, half point PPR. Greg Olsen in the 8th round, Latavius Murray in the 9th round, Tyler Lockett in the 11th round, or Jameis Winston in the 4th round.
I'm going Latavius.
Yeah, I think you have to. I mean, Jameis in the 4th round, I would imagine that's about the spot you would be able to get him.
So what I want to know, though, in keeper leagues, don't you have to sort of know who everybody's keeping? In this particular instance, if a lot of quarterbacks are being kept, you might have to just keep Jameis Winston in the 4th.
Well, the way that I would view it is I'd rather keep Latavius in the 9th round.
Mm-hmm.
And then just draft 2 quarterbacks, because you have Johnson, Murray, and who's Odell?
Yeah.
Yeah, you just draft 2 quarterbacks of your first 2 picks, which one could be Winston. So you're taking the better value of the player as your second running back in the 9th round, and then you just, you know, go early on a quarterback. So you're not keeping Winston at the value you may have to draft him, but you're keeping better value at Murray.
Standard scoring league, who scores more fantasy points, Michael Floyd or Latavius Murray?
Floyd.
Murray's going to have more yards.
Maybe.
I would expect Murray to have, like, total yards. I would expect he's going to have more. I think I'm going to say Murray.
What did Murray have last year, like 1,200?
That's probably about right.
I think Floyd can get there.
Okay. Well, I think Murray's going to have more yards this year.
He could. He also didn't have any competition last year.
Standard scoring league, who scores more fantasy points, Michael Floyd or Blaine Gabbert?
Oh, Gabbert.
So you think Gabbert's going to start majority of the season?
I mean, we're going to play out of the game here. Yes, I'll say Gabbert plays 60 games.
I'm going to say Gabbert only plays 6 games and Floyd outscores him.
Okay. Good stuff.
This is a hell of a hypotheticals.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the Michael Floyd show. And that will take us through the weekend here.
At least you're attaching your name to a good player this year. It's not Quentin Patton. You're going with somebody that has at least some significance. Not Marquise Lee or Darren Sproles.
Joseph Randall.
Or Quentin Patton.
Who was my guy last year?
Randall, wasn't it?
It was Joseph Randall and Darren Sproles.
No, I think you're thinking of CJ Spiller. It definitely was not Darren
Sproles. CJ Spiller, not Darren Sproles. You're right. He was much better than Spiller.
Yeah, don't attach me to that Darren Sproles guy. I was all about CJ Spiller. No, but Randall for sure. Yeah.
Have you attached your name to somebody that's actually done well?
I mean,
Beckham, I guess. You were an Odell Beckham guy.
I was a Beckham guy. I was a Victor Cruz guy before Victor Cruz.
That's right.
Became good.
Yep.
First of all, that was a really mean thing to say. I'm sure I have attached my name to players.
Well, no,
really
like
good.
like you're staking your claim on Michael Floyd, which is great, and he's, you know, somebody I think that we all like, but you have gone the Marquise Lee route before.
Yeah, but that's like totally round flyer.
I get it. But I'm just saying, like, you've like gone out on a limb on, like, CJ Spiller is in the Michael Floyd range because he was expected to do well. Joseph Randle's in the Michael Floyd range. So those guys didn't perform very well. Like Marquise Lee and Quentin Patton are guys that you were just taking a shot in the dark on to try and, you know, find a guy that a lot of people could have looked at with late round picks.
The answer to your question is, unfortunately, because this is my least favorite criticism of me, is that I only talk about the Giants, but it's Beckham and Cruz
are the only players.
But I would say that maybe not the extent of Beckham, but just in terms of where those guys are being drafted, those were more of the later round value guys.
Yeah, well, for Beckham, it was nobody was really paying any attention to him because he missed all of training camp, all of preseason, and I was like, I think we should probably pick him up. And then, of course, he had like the second greatest rookie season in wide receiver history. And yeah, Cruz was more of a, I'm kind of believing in him based on his awesome preseason.
Right.
I don't remember other guys I was in love with. I've definitely had a lot of success with that in baseball. Not so sure about.
Oh, you've had success. I'm just those are the guys that jump off the page to me. You know, you, who did you drop to pick up Quentin Patton that one time?
I didn't pick up Quentin Patton, did I?
Yeah, you made a transaction to pick up Quentin Patton.
This is the best segment of the Fantasy Football Today podcast ever.
Dude, I got this one friend who's a huge 49ers fan. And he's telling me all this great stuff about Quentin Patton.
Urbano?
Yeah, so I bought into Quentin Patton just a little bit. That was a mistake.
I just got my, we do videos. We're doing videos this afternoon, Adam, and I just got my list of 17 players to talk about on video. And in the list are Victor Cruz, Marquise Lee, CJ Spiller, Reuben Randle. It's going to be.
Wow.
Yeah, you want to fly down here and do these videos for me?
Wow, that's awesome.
How many times can you quote Adam in those videos? That should be your goal.
All right.
Yeah. Also, I'm pretty spot on about Reuben Randle being a very bad player. So,
so are the Giants.
Yeah, I guess so. All right. Well, that's it for
Sterling Shepard's going to be the best rookie wide receiver.
Michael Floyd, New York Giants hour. Oh, yes. Jamie wrote a story about that. Check it out on CBSSports.com/fantasy. Thanks for listening, everybody. We really appreciate it. I know you have a lot of choices out there. Thank you for listening to us. We'll come back next week and do three or four more. And then I think we're going to be at five a week once training camp starts. We haven't quite ironed that out yet, but it's coming soon. So get ready for a lot of fantasy football podcasts. Heath, Jamie, thank you guys. See you later.
Thank you.
Bye.